And last but not least, Dr. Jack Dillenberg is a former state dental director, as well as the inaugural dean of the Arizona School of Dentistry and Oral Health at the A.T. Still University in Mesa, Arizona. Did I say that right? Mesa. The Arizona School of Dentistry and Oral Health was the first U.S. dental school to offer an innovative model of community service-oriented dental education. His presentation, Family-Centered Health Home, will highlight a health practice model to improve total health through an innovative dental education model.
Hello. Hello. All right, I give you all for being here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is a tremendous testament to your commitment to public health. For those of you that I'm meeting for the first time, Jack Dillenberg, it's a pleasure for me to be with you and share with you some thoughts about this family-centered health home, but from the perspective that I bring to it, being a public health guy that happens to be a dentist, that, as we've heard during the week, access to care is not about having the money for it, because there's reimbursement you can get, you can do this or that. It's going to the dentist and having a dentist either not be there or have a dentist that's not willing to treat you. So we know that the workforce, there's all sorts of data that tells us that there are dentists, there are hygienists, there are all sorts of different providers, there are different needs out there. One disclaimer I have, the financial disclaimer is I don't owe Scott any money, and so I'm free and clear of that. The other disclaimer is my remarks have very little correlation to my PowerPoint slides. So please, this is for your entertainment. I just show that because we're supposed to show slides. One of the things, as you saw the other slide, of the increased numbers of elderly in particular that I want to talk about, that's changing the demographics of who we serve, what the needs are in this country. A lot of our focus is on kids, but the reality is the fastest growing group of Americans are the group over 80 years old. We expect that in the year 2020, there will be over 1 million centenarians in this country. So if we're not comfortable treating and engaging older adults, we need to have some type of major change. Societal changes, the public's more increasingly well-informed about their healthcare choices. I don't think that they know a lot of the accurate information, though they are informed. They go on the internet, they go on Google, they've got facts. They may not have anything to do with the reality of their condition or concerns or even questions, but they have access to this stuff. They have more of a role and want more of a role in determining what their health outcomes are. The days are over of the Marcus Welby physician coming in with a white coat, the stethoscope, and saying, this is what you need to do. No. They're going to know many options and want to be involved in their health care. And I think oral health is a very important component of that self-realization that we have to be sensitive to our patients. Healthcare workers need to be more sensitive to the consumer. I mentioned about the older population. We have to be able to deal with this group and do it in a very systematic way and understand the role of chronic disease. I think one of the issues in dentistry is, you know, patients come in, you know, and they're going to have 20 or 30 meds. What do we do? How do we do it? How do we treat? What do we look for? You know, we get so focused on the teeth that we become very good tooth technicians, but we're not that good healthcare providers. And we really have to have this broader view of the patients that we're serving. That's where this family health and health home comes in, from my perspective. We've been talking about primary care. We've always said how important it is for oral health to be a recognized essential element of primary care, comprehensive care. Well, I think it's going to have to be interdisciplinary or interprofessional care. We can't do this alone. And I'm going to talk about that. We have to provide the provider of the future to be able to work in that environment. We talk about medical home. I hear this phrase about dental home, but ladies and gentlemen, that's not enough. We have to develop a health home. It's not about teeth. I share with my students all the time, it's about the person attached to the tooth, it's about the family attached to the person, and ultimately the community that's attached to that family. Because if we don't deal with those issues, then we're just that tooth technician and we're missing the boat. Because patients come to see us with diabetes, with obesity, obesity, with domestic violence issues, with alcohol and substance abuse issues, poverty issues, transportation issues. I think we, as healthcare providers and meaningful members of our society, have to be concerned about that. And this health home is not just a physical place. It has all these qualities. It has to be culturally caring. The barriers to setting this up, for example, is that oral health is not on the radar screen of a lot of the medical community. You ask any physician, they probably had one lecture in medical school on the eruption of teeth. That's it. They look from the lips to the tonsils, everything in between. What is this? So I think we really have to do a better job of educating physicians, and they are doing a better job. And it's interesting, Drexel University, there's medical school. They have a student oral health club started by medical students because this young group of individuals is recognizing that need, and I want to encourage you to encourage the other healthcare providers to learn more about oral health. Who's going to make this change? We're going to be part of it. APHA is some of the greatest advocates I've ever met in my life. Can make a profound difference. These healthcare system and health insurance executives have to see the benefit, the cost effectiveness of improving oral health, improving health in the general sense. The health profession schools. I mean, there is nothing more difficult than trying to add on anything onto a health profession school curriculum. Whether it be dental school, medical school, nursing school, I don't care what it is, they're jam-packed. That's why I was lucky to be able to start a new school. Pediatricians have been doing an incredible job of recognizing the importance of oral health and in that. Social worker. Our dental school has social work students on the floor of our clinic for the very reason that I mentioned before. Patients are in there for other reasons than just their teeth. I want our students to recognize they're part of a team. These are things that these social work students can do. This is one of my favorite quotes I'll share with you. It's not what we have that will make us a great nation. It's the way in which we use it. We've got the solutions here in America. We do. We've got great resources here. We just choose to do different things with them. And I think we have to do a better job. Leadership is required. It's not just about being a provider. You've got to have the leadership to do it, to make a difference, to inspire, encourage, motivate, and then reinforce some of these things. And we have to do it in a compassionate, humble way. It's critically important that what I call servant leaders, and we model through our own service our humility. I think one of the things we've learned, confidence builds great leaders. I love that cat. That cat's got confidence. This is my yin and yang slide, because I think those dogs demonstrate great discipline, and we need them both. You need to have courage, and you need to have discipline. I'm here to tell you that for us to invoke the change that we need to encourage, lead, and develop in this country, it's going to take courage. Don't be afraid to take a risk. I tell my students, for a turtle to go forward, he's got to stick his neck out. Don't make foolish risks, but don't be afraid to take risks. I think, as we know, and we've talked about oral health being part of overall health. We know these things, self-esteem being a big one. I love this one, rationalizations. I have metal fillings in my teeth. My refrigerator magnets keep pulling me into the kitchen. That's why I can't lose weight. We'll come up with anything. We'll come up with anything. We're good at it. We've made lives of it. I love those of you who saw The Big Chill. You ever see that, with that movie, about my generation, stuff like that? We can't go through the day without a rationalization. I remember Jeff Goldblum said in that line of that movie, rationalizations were more important than sex. When was the last day you went a day without a rationalization? Rationalization, we do it all the time. We have to prevent that. We have to go forward. We need these competencies, cross-cutting. We can go across this. The future of our profession is different than what we think it will be, and that lies in who we pick to be the professionals that will follow us. And it's not going to be the person with the white shirt and tie that comes in for our interviews. It's going to be this young person. This young person is going to be the health care provider of the future. And we can't come to these young men and women with a predisposition that if they come to us looking like this, that they're not going to be meaningful, caring, compassionate leaders that are going to make the profound difference that we need to improve health in this country. So we have to look at our expectations. So what did I do? I used to be a health commissioner, too. I ran a state health department, which was a really fun gig, and I got to get a sense that it's about health. It's not about teeth. So when I had the chance to start a dental school with A.T. Stewart University, and I'll share with you, we are a private, not-for-profit 501c3. Some people think we're a for-profit school. No, we are not. We are a not-for-profit 501c3 school. What makes us different? Well, our purpose, educate, caring, technology, blah, 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 blah. Leaders, serving those in need. And we are the only dental school in the United States, even today, since three new schools started after us, that has oral health in its name. We are not a school of dentistry. We're not a school of dental medicine. We're a school of dentistry and oral health because it is about health. It's about health. And if we're not talking about health, as I said, we're being more irrelevant than we need to be. We're needs focused. We educate these folks. We're service education, and a lot of leadership training. I'll tell you about that. Special care dentistry is a very important part of what we do. I spent early part of my career working in an institution for the intellectually disabled. And it changed my life. These are the most underserved people in this country when it comes to oral health. The special patient, Down syndrome, autistic child. You know, and we talk about when Medicaid, age 21, what do you do with an autistic child that becomes 21 and loses all the benefits that it has? It's really a crime what we're doing in this country. We built a special care clinic at our school. Every student rotates through this, and they love it. They love it immensely. And so they're very well equipped to do. We do dentistry in the community. One of the things that makes us different is to pick that young man or woman that we take. And I say young in a very fun sort of way, because I took two men 2 years ago in our incoming class that were 48 years old. Last year, we took a young woman that was 16, college graduate, pretty Doogie Howser, pretty impressive. We take young men and women that have come to us with demonstrated community service, the most important criteria, over a 2.5 average to get into our school. They come to us with an average of 700 hours of community service. You do the math. That's huge. And they come into our school. Tell you how many. We had 3,300 applicants this year for 70 spots from 38 states. It's not easy to pick when you got that many great men and women to pick from. And we take, our curriculum is very different. We started a dental school, no tenure. They said I'd never get faculty. Well, every week I get emails from people who want to come teach at our school. We have a full faculty. Every position's filled. Our students come in. We have a very advanced basic science curriculum. I bring in faculty from all over the United States to teach. We immerse our students, which in a modular fashion that allowed us to do it in a fast way so we can do these dentistry in the community projects. Just like you see here, we do that throughout the 4 years, so they're doing a lot of stuff. Every one of our students also participates in our external rotations in the fourth year, where they spend 52% of the time away from me. As much as I love them, we have 68 sites ranging from Bethel, Alaska, Bozeman, Montana, Ellsworth, Maine, community clinics where our students go for 4 to 6 weeks in residence, treating real people in real clinics under the guidance of an adjunct faculty member at these sites that are calibrated at our school. They see 8 to 12 patients a day. Traditional dental school sees 2, right? 2? 8 to 12 a day. It's pretty extraordinary. These sites are all over the place. All over. They're fabulous. Indian Reserve, Bethel, just Wayne Cottam runs that. These are great sites, fabulous opportunities. I'm not going to read these things. Students, it changes their lives. I could spend time reading these. We have our students write reflections every week. I'm going to publish them. They make me cry. Tears of joy. We produce our graduates. We graduated 4 classes now of our graduates that go into practice. Over 40% of them will go to work in community clinics. It's the highest number in the history of dental education by fourfold of any dental school in history. Every student graduates with a certificate in public health. This year we had 13 graduate with full masters of public health. They say, are they good dentists? Are they good clinicians? Well, they take the Western Regional Examining Board exam and they... We had 100% pass the clinical exam this year. I'll try to do better next year, but we're working on it. Everyone gets a certificate in public health, as I mentioned, with these basic core courses. I'm even developing a new one next year to meet. We heard about the faculty shortage this morning. I'm adding a dental faculty track of our certificate of public health, where instead of taking these 5 courses in public health, they'll take 3 in public health and 2 in either curriculum development and how to teach. Because I want all of our graduates to spend some time teaching somewhere along the line. I got 2 minutes. Boy, can we do this. We do a hometown project. We are the corporate partners of NAC, National Association of Community Health Centers. If a community health center nominates a student to our program to come to our school, they automatically get an interview. That's huge. Goes from 3,000 to 400, gets their interview. This year's incoming class of 70, we have, I'd say, 20 to 23 hometown students in our class that are linked to a community health center. Faculty advance. I bring all of our faculty from all of these 68 sites and all of our faculty together. We don't do a retreat. What's a retreat? You go backwards. I want to go forward. We do an advance, faculty advance, calibrate everyone, learn everything. They learn what each doing. We don't have a first year education or some, they say preclinical, clinical. We do a 4-year educational model. It's all about the continual thing. It's a new practice model, blah, blah, blah. We're not going to get into this stuff. Teamwork. Teamwork. We're all in this together. I'm tired of all this crap about, oh, the hygienists, they want to do this. The dentist. We're all in this together. It's all about whatever providers can provide the service that a state or a government says you're able to do it to the extent that you can do it with a good heart, do it with compassion, do it with caring, doing it in a way that's going to improve the health of the patients that you serve. That's what we need to do. That's what the school is about. We're opening up a new two new branch campuses, one in San Diego and one in rural Missouri, in a very close partnership with the Community Health Center and Primary Care Network in the Midwest. Thank you very much for your attention, and keep up the great stuff that you do in public health. It's really important. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Okay. Ron, do you...
Humor is an important part of my communication, Jack, right? If we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong. Remember that in life. Even in dental schools.
Right. What was the question, please?
The question is, how many students from New Mexico have we taken and how many have graduated? A lot. We have a few. Michelle, I mean, we got Charlie. They were in community health centers there, and we're negotiating with the University of New Mexico and the state of New Mexico for us to be their regional dental school and have seats and partner with them, identify underrepresented minority kids from rural New Mexico from high school and work them all the way through. What's that? I don't know. Sorry, Jack. So we're working with New Mexico to do that. We want to produce dentists for New Mexico, and we have, and we do it, and we love it. Yes?
A lot of other dental schools put quite a bit of emphasis on DAT scores. You mentioned...
Yes, I do not. There has never been a study that I know of that's correlated the scores on DATs to success in dental school, to success as a dentist. For me, I require students to take them. I know that if I take a student with a 17 DAT, they may struggle on part one of the national boards that they take in our school. I don't care. You know, they got to take it. I know that, so there's a certain threshold. If they got a 13 or 14, I think they're going to be really doomed to fail because it's they got to work on some course, basic sciences. But I don't, it's not a minimum requirement. You have to have a 2.5 average. 2.5 average, take the DATs. Yes, Myron. Community service, documented. What the question was, how will we determine what is the most important criteria for students coming into our school? Documented community service letters, not letters from physics teachers or organic chemistry professors, but letters from the Boys and Girls Club director that you worked there and tutored a young man or woman in the language from a community service environment. As I said, we have our students coming in have an average of 700 hours of community service before they start our program. We do the best we can. It's hard. We interview, conversation. We do a lot. We have our interviews are very intensive, one-on-one. I try to meet every student that during the interview process, except when I'm asked to come and give talks. But we do. The interview is a very important component.
And how did they do on state licensing
board? As I mentioned, in our state licensing board, we had 100% pass the clinical boards this year.
You do a mock exam?
We do two mock exams, not one but two. We have, plus we have a gold foil study club that the students started that they wanted. Think of that, dentist in the room. They wanted it because just for fun to do this. So the students generated gold foils club. I thought I public health kids. It was hysterical. And we have all of our students graduate doing 5 or 6 implants, placing them. Our students do flap surgery because of the experience they get in these community health centers. They're extraordinary clinicians. We had 26 out of 26 of our graduates this year, Myron, that applied to residencies, got in. to the residency of their choice, including 7 out of 7 at the pediatrics, the most competitive residency, 3 out of 3 into maxillofacial surgery. So these are very sought after men and women coming out of the program. We have the highest number of American Indian dental students of any dental school in the United States, more than the University of Oklahoma. So we're very proud of that and our affiliation with Dr. Blue Spruce. Scott.
Just a comment. The oral health section participated in the development of a policy around the health home concept, and it was passed at this year's governing council. They went with the term health care home.
Health care.
Send me a copy.
I love it. See, I just like to do with health. See, I want care is when you're not healthy. You don't need care if you're healthy. You need care if you're unhealthy. I want to deal with the health. Let's avoid the care by being healthy. That's just my little take on it.
How do we get paid for health?
How do you get paid for health? Well, I tell you, Harvard Community Health Plan and the health plan of Puget Sound did it very well years ago when the original HMOs. HMOs were started, they were called health maintenance organizations. You know, that's what it was, to maintain health. You paid, you know, you had reduced premiums for being healthy, for doing the routine. It's a wonderful concept, and I'm doing good. I'm not late. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Today's session was intended to identify programs that reduce barriers to access to dental services, and I think all the presenters did a great job with that. And we can take a few more questions from the other presenters that are still here. Are there any other questions? Yes.
The Diamante Driver Project, how much did you emphasize transmissibility and the bacterial nature of decay?
We have to repeat the question. Would you like to come up and ask the question? Okay. In the Diamante Driver Project, how much did you emphasize the transmission of bacteria in the process of decay? Why don't you come up here to answer, please? Yes. Was that your question? Okay.
Not being a dentist, I have to give that disclaimer. We did discuss at the school visits the importance of brushing, that does reduce bacteria in the mouth, brushing, using mouthwash, brushing throughout the day, because we were dealing with some low-income families, we stressed to them and their parents, even if they didn't necessarily always have toothpaste, to use water, to do something to just keep brushing and keep their mouth clean. Reduction in sugar intake, those are things we did emphasize.
The question from Dr. Pollack was, what type of follow-up is provided to these children once their needs are identified?
So what we did was we returned the dental report cards to the school nurse's office. And we actually, the children that were identified as having immediate need were actually like shortlisted. Their names were actually right on the paper. And so we didn't just send the dental report card home with the list of Medicaid accepting dentists. We actually did work with the school nurse to make sure that they called the parents and made sure that care was scheduled. Now, one thing, if there were parents that were not taking their children in for care, then we did partner with the health department also in order to, I guess, facilitate making sure that if we had to bring a social worker in, which in a couple instances that did have to happen, to make sure that care was received by the children. Since a lot of the chart that showed the schools from the spring and the fall, we went back to the same schools and had to see a lot of the same children, and the majority of which moved from the category, at least from A to B, or from B to C, or from A to C. We did try to actually track that and compare it from fall to spring and see where they moved. And if we did get back in the fall and notice that someone we identified as A in the spring was still a Category A immediate need in the fall, then additional follow-up measures were taken.
You got a lot of great participation from the governor and a lot of good seed money. And is he going to, I guess my question is, who's going to keep funding the bus?
The question is, how will the Diamante Driver project be sustained? Sorry.
The major cost was the dental van that has actually been purchased. Additional money, we do have money from other grantors that we had to seek. There's a couple of grants through Aetna. We actually had to apply for grants and get additional money other than state money to run the program. The biggest contribution, though, was from the state.
I have a question for Jasmine. Did they consider using the van to place sealants or provide fluoride treatments?
That has been something that has been considered. Initially, the initial van that was pictured was a borrowed van. We were a bit limited in the things we could do, particularly because in year one, the permission slips were really just for us looking at the children's teeth, not providing services on the van. That was one of the things that we had to do to build trust within the community and with the schools, so the parents would be comfortable letting their children come on, and we had to do quite a bit. Moving forward, we're supposed to be providing services on the van. That's not happening right now, but that is the overall plan, that service will be provided on the van if necessary, if these children are unable to go to a dentist to obtain care.
Gary?
You may have mentioned this, but does the project bill Medicaid for the services?
The question is, does the Diamante Driver project bill Medicaid for any of the services?
No. All the dentists that work on the van is completely voluntary. They actually are practicing dentists that leave their practice it's like a calendar. They schedule time to work on the van, usually like a month in advance. We try to have a monthly calendar. We call the dentist, when can you come? Are you free this day? Are you free that day? And we schedule the school visits around when the dentist can come. The school visits are usually around 3 hours or so. Sometimes it goes a little over in length. So everything is voluntary. So no.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for either Jasmine or our other two speakers? Howard?
I had a question about the Canadian study.
Okay. Vinay, why don't you come up here? The question is Saskatchewan and Regina fluoridated or not?
No, only Saskatoon is fluoridated and Regina is not fluoridated. Or let me put it this way, Saskatoon has access to, nearly 87% of Saskatoon has access to water fluoridation, and only 4% of Regina has access to water fluoridation.
Statistics on when your dental health therapists stopped practicing, what was the state of the children in the Saskatchewan schools? You said it was a positive, but I didn't hear any numbers.
Sorry?
After
discontinuation.
The school therapists.
Okay.
The school, they stopped them in 93.
Yeah.
What was the state of the school population caries-wise at that point?
I don't think it was measured.
Are there any other questions for Dr. O'Connell or for Dr. Pilley?
If not, this concludes the last session of the oral health section for APHA. I'd like to thank our speakers and give them a round of applause, and especially our student presenters.